In today's podcast, we're going to discuss the importance of having the mindset always hiring. We're going to go over some of the pain points every retailer experiences in hiring and employee retention, and the actual cost of replacing your team, and what percentage of turnover you should expect versus what it actually may be. We're going to give you some tips on interviewing and recruiting in general, and a very powerful metric that every retailer should understand. What is their quit to fire ratio? Harry, welcome back. I would love to chat today about the idea of always hiring. Is it that important?
Justin, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I came to the realization a few years ago that there were two issues. One was we keep losing people in retail. So employee retention is a big, huge part of, or it's the antithesis or the counterbalance to the whole recruiting thing. But there's always people are telling me that, we can't find quality people and we can't find competent people and qualified people. And I've always thought you could. I mean, you could find anybody you want. The caveat is you just can't find them quickly. And retail seems to be in this position where they, lose someone and then they go on the hunt. So it's always a little bit behind the eight ball instead of in front of it. Can you imagine a baseball team losing a third baseman and not having anybody to replace them?
No,
it's just really funny. Yeah, well, the team from the South has eight players today because their recruiting effort was really, pretty poor.
Yeah. Well, isn't that the analogy every company uses? Who's on your bench? Like build your bench, right?
Well, it's a colloquialism. Does it mean that anybody's really paying attention to it?
Probably not.
Well, okay. So let's start with a different kind of a premise. What is the cost of losing someone? And when you start thinking about the amount of time that your floor is being underserved, and then you think of the time for the expense to run ads or whatever you're doing to recruit, and then somebody's time to interview them a couple times, and then you got a new guy, and this person is not producing at a reasonable level for X number of months. And we've done the calculations on this many, 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 many times. And even at the lowest level, it costs $3,000 to $5,000 to replace somebody. So that's a big number when you start multiplying that by, 30, 40, 50, 60% turnover rate in your organization. It's really, it's kind of mind-numbing.
So when you're saying $3,000 to $5,000, we're taking into account lost revenue and time that someone is taking recruiting and training and hiring that individual, correct?
It's the whole picture. It's the whole picture. So you have a new employee that doesn't produce very well right at the beginning because they're in training and learning the ropes. You've got all the time invested in the people that are doing the interviewing and caring and shuffling paper in the main office and tying some of those people up and the cost of the ads and all that. It's very expensive. It really is expensive. So whenever we talk about recruiting, first I'd like to talk about employee retention. Because the more people you keep, the less people you need.
Oh, it's shocking.
Yeah. So I've talked about this before, and I don't know if we have it on the podcast or not, but we have this thing called employee values assessment, and it's really wonderful. It's this concept of what are the things that are valuable, important to the employees on the floor at any category. So you've got salespeople, managers, district managers, so forth, cashiers. These are all categories of employee, and the assessment that you do for them are different, right? So the assessment for a district manager's values are different than a manager or salesperson. Anyway, we have a list of, 15, 20 different items that people find valuable. And we did this through tremendous numbers of surveys. And every time we got a lot of traction on a particular one, we added it to the list. I mean, there's always someone coming up with something oddball, but these were the really most important things that employees looked for in their employer. And so we put them on the list, and then we rated them. I can't remember, actually. I wish you could rate them 1 to 10 or 1 to 5. It doesn't really matter, as long as you have a consistent scale. And 5 being it's really valuable to me, or 10 being really valuable to me, and 1 not so valuable to me. And so you rate it as what's valuable to you personally. And then there's the company side, and you say, well, this is how well I believe that the company is providing me with that. So if one of the things were chance for advancement, you know, that's always on everybody's top 10 list. And we say, well, that's really important to me. It's a 10. I want to, you know, go far in this company. And then they rate the company at a 2. They say, well, there's, you know, no real good chance that they're going to notice me, and I'm going to, you know, there's no real career path for me, and so forth. So you do that. It's really quite wonderful. Then now it gets interesting. Now you take the managers, district managers, regionals, executives, and as a separate population, you don't mix them up. So you say, well, how do the managers feel about what the salespeople feel, and then every other category. So what you're saying is that as a district manager, how important do you believe this is to the employees? Not to you, but to the employees. And then how well do you think we provide this? And I got to tell you, Justin, the disconnect here is absolutely remarkable. And some of the things that the employees want are so easy to achieve. And yet, because of a lack of consciousness or knowing about it, we didn't put any attention and focus on it. So this is where I start with my recruiting program. And it turns out to be a very interesting exercise, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Well, if you go through the exercise and you have a bunch of twos on areas that are extremely important to employees, is it too late for that group of people? Is it now something you have to fix?
Now, listen, it's never too late. You are where you are anyway, right? So this is the idea that you need to make these improvements. And if they're major improvements, and if they're significantly good improvements, then of course you could sell it to the staff and let them know that you've looked at the survey and you're making changes to make the company more attentive and more exciting for them to work for and have a career with. It's a big deal. Employee turnover is a big deal, and this is the single best way I know of trying to get a handle on where people are. By the way, the survey should be anonymous. You can put this up online, and you can do it with SurveyMonkey, or you can do it with a whole bunch of people, and hopefully people will be real straight about it, and you can go from there. On the other hand, let's talk about recruiting. What do you think?
Let's do it.
So,
are you just to clarify? Are you assuming now you've gone through this exercise, but you're still in the process of always recruiting? But at least you know what are the most valuable items that your employees, you know, care about in the company.
Yes, it's so easy to say always recruiting, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy to say that. I found very few companies that really take this as a serious side of their business. This is, if you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in expenses a year for a medium-sized company, and tens of thousands of dollars a year for small independent retailers, I think this is time to start paying attention. I mean, we'll pay more attention to a half a point of margin or a 16th of a point increase in payroll cost percentage, and not put the time, energy, and real fervor behind the idea of recruiting really great people. So there's a lot of issues here, Justin. So when you're recruiting, set up what this whole game is all about. And the game is to not only attract talent that's equal to, if not better than anything you've got on the floor now, but you also have to provide an environment where they can flourish. So we don't want to stay on this road. Of course, we expect a reasonable amount of turnover. You know, a great retailer will experience somewhere around 25% of salespeople and about 15% of managers. I think I can live with that. I just can't live with 50s and 60s with salespeople and 25s and 30s with managers. I just can't do it. It sucks the life out of everyone. And we get this back off. You say, well, look, we're not keeping anybody anyway. We'll just manage the turnover. But wow, they're managing the turnover instead of trying to reduce it. It's really quite crazy.
Counterintuitive.
Yeah. So there's another thing that we really need to take a look at. And this is one of my favorite inventions, actually. I used to own a chain of stores many years ago. We were in the electronics business. We sold the very, very high-end stereo equipment and televisions and so forth. I had four of those stores. And I had a district manager because, frankly, I was busy doing the Friedman Group. So I would have weekly meetings and try to stay on top of everything as best I could. And we did a pretty good job. But one of the interesting things happened to me was I did a store visitation thing it was over a couple days. And I noticed something really bizarre, that there was like 50 or 60% of the people in the stores I had never seen before. So I'm going, what the heck is going on here? Your turnover must be remarkable. Give me a full report. And the DM gave me a report that we had turned the staff over completely within the year. We had 100% turnover rate. And I went, my God, that is absolutely horrendous. What the heck is going on? And I realized that the turnover report was not enough information for me to do anything. And I said, okay, I need you to go back and take the people that have left and give me the quit to fire ratio. And he said, what's that? And I said, well, out of 100%, what was the percentage of people that quit? And what was the percentage of people that were terminated? Wow. It was amazing. So guess what? Kind of surprised me. What's your guess, Justin? Did we have more quit or more fired?
I would assume the regional manager and the manager are terminating people based on poor performance.
The highest ratio by far was the termination. It wasn't quitting. They weren't quitting. We were terminating. So what does that tell us? So as we dug into this, you realize that if people are quitting, they're quitting for any number of four or five reasons. And very rarely, interestingly enough, it's not for money. The number one thing is who they work for. They're just not chucking and jiving and, you know, hipping and hopping with the person that they're working for, guy or gal, whatever, right? They're not quite there. They also may or may not like the merchandise, maybe some of the company policies, the chance to get ahead, the ability to be listened to, and a variety of other soft things until it gets down to pay, which is somewhere around 6 or 7. We all think we work for money, but people take the job knowing how much they're going to get paid. So it's not such a surprise. And they kind of know what their future is. So it's not the biggest issue. When you terminate people, you got to look to who you're hiring. And so we went back and reviewed all of our hiring practices, all the questions that we asked the recruits, and changed it up virtually 180 degrees. And we started looking for different kinds of attributes, different questions that would elicit more responses that we could deal with down the road. And, it was remarkable. We cut our turnover rate by, I think it was about 50 or 60% the first year. And then we drove it down further as we paid more attention to what was going on. If you're firing people, you're hiring the wrong people. If they're quitting, you've got an environment where people don't believe they could flourish. So when you start taking a look at the global, the 20,000 foot picture of recruiting, you got to get all your ducks in a row well in advance and start thinking about what the impact is all around before you just start trying to hire people. Who wants to hire someone that's just going to quit anyway in a couple of weeks?
Well, Harry, question for you. A friend of mine who owns a group of automotive stores once said to me that nobody graduates college thinking they're going to go work in the car business. And I sometimes feel like retail falls in the same boat. you sit there and go, well, is it possible to find good people, or are they always hiring from a poor quality pool?
That's a great question. I have a client in Texas, maybe one of the great auto dealership, now that you brought up autos, one of the great auto companies in the United States, one of the best reputations on the planet. They're just super stars, super studs. They're really amazing. And they recruit, this is to sell cars, they recruit only college graduates. They have a tendency to recruit Aggies, which is kind of interesting. In any event, starting wage is $75,000 in a brand new car. That's pretty appealing for a brand new guy out of college. But here's the truth. The biggest thing is, mom, dad, I just graduated college and I'm going to go sell cars. I think that's what you're saying. It's a toughie. Certainly retail has done a, it's not a matter of retail doing a bad job. We've earned everything that we get. So the mere fact that people don't admire retail salespeople, you know, makes sense just because, you know, we've earned it. On the other hand, it is an entry level, at the lowest, it's an entry level position at very low wages, correct?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
On the high side, you have guys making, you know, six figures in a heartbeat. I know way many people that make 150, 200 grand a year in retail. Not a bad living. And it's a beautiful job. The idea that you get to meet brand new people all the time and make wonderful presentations and connect them with the terrific selection of merchandise that you have. It's all pretty cool stuff, for sure. We're just not really good at telling the story. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
But be that as it may, well, I don't know that you and me and a couple of retailers down the block are going to change the world's opinion of a retail guy. So this is a battle that's a tactical battle that has to be won out in the field, one person at a time. But we can say and do things to recruit people that's different and engaging and so forth. So it all starts with a battle plan, a strategic plan. And the plan says, look, we're going to have more applicants than we have jobs for, you know, by 10 to 1 every month. So you actually set these goals down on paper and you say, okay, now that I've got the burden of getting 100 applications or 150 applications, if you're a certain size, 10, 15, if you're a smaller size, you know, 800, if you're a big size, what are all the ways that we can attract applications? Now, if you notice what I said here, I didn't say attract good people. I just said applications, right? It starts with, first of all, your ability to attract applications, people that are interested. And in our management course, in some of our master's courses, we talk a lot about this. And when you get people in a room talking about how you can get applications, some of the ideas that come out are really wonderful. First of all, a lot of people advertise. Now, some people still do print. That's fine. But one way or another, we're letting the world know who we are. So it's everything from print advertising to Facebook to Instagram to, you know, your front windows of your store to other methodologies, which are unique, which we could talk about, unique recruiting methods. But the idea is that you're always hiring so that you're always letting people know that you have careers available. Let's not say help wanted, let's say careers available, and let's spend a little money on the graphics and make it look really, really appealing. I love the idea of having a recruiting brochure. It's just an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, folded landscape into a threefold, where you talk a little bit about the company, the benefits, the reasons it's so cool to work there and all that. There should be a permanent, gorgeous recruiting brochure. Business cards of every employee on the back should say, we're always hiring. If you're interested, give me a call. And when you meet people out in the world that you think might be a great fit, you hand them a business card and tell them not to forget to look on the back. We can get very, very clever about how to recruit if we put our mind to it and decide that it's really a cool thing. Let me give you another example. There are retail stores all over your neighborhood that are recruiting as well. and they're in different categories. So if you're a mid-range women's fashion retailer, the guy sells some other sporting goods, different kind of business, they're seeing people come in as you do, and you just pass them along. You say, well, I don't have a spot for you, but I have a guy down the block that's hiring. Go see Joe. These recruiting partners, if done by with 10 or 15 or 20 other retailers in your community, works really wonderful. You could also have little community job fairs, which are really terrific. Go find a place in the park, go get 10 of your buddies, set up little tables, advertise it together, and you got your own controlled job fair. There's so many things that you can do if you just decide you're in the recruiting business. Now, what happens is, so they'll do a job fair once and won't do it again for another 10 years. This is something that is an ongoing funded process, and you're prepared. You're prepared with the brochures. You're prepared with what happens when someone calls. What's the routine? How do you take them through the process? And I may add real quickly that you take them through the process quickly. When people are looking for work, they're looking for work. And if you don't bring them in quickly, they may find another job, Johnny, on the spot. I mean, I've lost people because I said, why don't you come in next Tuesday? By that time, they already had a job. So I don't make that mistake anymore.
So what about, you were talking about different ways to refer each other, some new hires. Are you a fan of employee referral bonuses?
Yeah, it doesn't work. It's always been a terrific idea. I think I've been doing it for 30 years with all my clients. Doesn't work? Nah, I mean, every once in a while, somebody will recommend someone, but is it a good idea? Yeah. I mean, do lots of people use it? Absolutely. Does anybody pay off because it works? Not really.
Interesting.
Yeah.
When you talk about job fairs, I remember in the last company I was with, we used to set up booths at, college job fairs, the local colleges. And we always got great, great candidates, but it was always reactive. We were hiring right then. And so we set it up right then. We didn't stay present, which when you're not present, when you're not there all the time, people forget about you and you don't build a reputation within that community, or in this case, within that university. But we always got great candidates out of there. And, people are looking to work. It's not like, jobs are just being handed out of college to every graduate. So you can get some really exciting people from even something as simple as a college job fair.
Yeah. So we set up with one of my clients, South America. I said, look, you need a whole new generation of managers that are going to really take the company forward. Why don't we set up a thing with university grads where we promise them a one-year accelerated management program? And man, it was fantastic. We recruited plenty of people because we were saying, here, you could go into management. So we had a whole schedule. They were going to be a salesperson for 4 or 5 months. Then they became an assistant manager, went into management training, and then we gave them a store. And they were absolutely stunningly good, sharp young college grads. I mean, that's one way to go. So I've always thought people are pretty smart, but they lack some creativity. And the whole idea for us is to pay a lot of attention to it in a meeting. And it's got to be a reoccurring kind of dynamic in your company. So the whole idea of applications is the easiest statistic to measure, right? So you measure, how many applications did we get in this month? Well, we got in 60. Well, why don't we let's get it to 100. Then you've got subordinate statistics after that. Of the 100 applications did you get, how many did you actually call for the first telephone interview? How many people did you bring in? How many people were hired? You could take a look at those subordinate statistics after the global stat of applications. You need quantity. You need choice. There are diamonds in the rough, without any doubt. And you have to take a look at what kind of attributes do you want. What do you want them to feel like, be like, act like? I mean, these are really, really important considerations. It's not that difficult. It's not that difficult when you put your mind to it. like I said, we have a big chapter in this in our Project Gold Star and some of our advanced stuff. And I don't know why people are so surprised that some of these answers are simple yet so effective.
I feel like I'm sure there's some listeners out there that the anxiety is building, thinking about who's going to read all the applications and who's going to call all these people and do I have enough time to do it? And I'm sure that actually a lot of their interview processes are a little bit too drawn out.
Stop. You just did it, man. You made my point.
Yep.
You know, you just made the point beautifully. If a company's worried about who's going to read the applications, who's going to do the interviews and all that, you're not in the business of recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm serious. You're not in the business. So if you had someone nominated to do that, that was part of their full-time job to do that and care about that, then they would go, wow, I need more applications because I can read through these very quickly. So there's always a bit of question, is the glass half empty or half full? Well, I just pick up the glass, drink it, and I don't have the problem anymore. problem solved.
Question, do you have a recommendation on the recruiting process, you know, from reading the application to actually going through the in-person? I feel like companies all kind of go all over the place with how many times they call somebody, how many times they come in for an in-person, yeah, who they meet with.
Yes, I do have an opinion on that. What a surprise. Yeah. Well, what I'm not going to do on this podcast is get into the actual interview itself, because I think that's a whole separate podcast. Be happy to do that. We can play in that arena. But I can give you the outline sketch. So first of all, you read the applications very carefully, and there's a checklist of 9 or 10 items that you're looking for. Okay, gaps in employment. I don't know what the current state of convicted of a felony thing is, if those things are important to you. Military service. Somebody says, I was in the military for 6 months, and you go, well, that doesn't sound about right. Usually it's 2 to 3 years minimum, and 6 months is not right. These are, you know, opportunities to ask questions. You can look at their payroll history and, you know, all the little bit of PR that they put on there. There's a lot of PR on an application. You know that. I mean, they're picking, mm-hmm, and choosing the right things to say and do, and you get experienced about all that. And as you read through this application with some of these checklist items, you start to see a pattern. And if they look pretty good, you put it, you know, in one pile, and you take all the other ones and you put it in another pile. So the first thing you do with a rejected pile is you send them an email, every single one of them, and say, although we really enjoyed your application, somebody with a little bit more appropriate experience was hired. Here's a coupon for a 10% off next time you come in the store. So we're taking all these people that applied for a job that have some affinity for the company and trying to make them feel good about that instead of feeling rejected and bad about that. So that pile of people that you're not going to hire, very valuable to your PR effort. I don't think there's 1 in 5,000 companies that pay attention to those applications. I know I do. And then when you have the good pile, or people that you're interested in, the second phase to this whole thing is a telephone screening. What's important to note is that it's short. It's, let's just say, 5 questions. And those 5 questions are exactly the same with every single person. And the reason is that you can't compare people when you do original interviews. Most people do original interviews. They sit down, they ask random questions, they go with the flow, and they don't stick to an agenda. So I'm very firm about those 5 questions. And what are you doing? You're trying to see if they can communicate well, if they're articulate, they can string a sentence together, they speak English well enough to be able to work on your floor, they have the enthusiasm and motivation and so forth. Try to get that out of 5 questions, and then you'll set up an interview. At the interview, so we've got screening, telephone screening, and first interview. So the first interview is interesting. In the Friedman process, we look to disqualify people, not qualify them. So we're looking for people that won't fit. It's a very interesting thing. I'm not looking to hire anybody. I'm looking to disqualify the people that I'm talking to. So my questions are very pointed at disqualification. And again, we'll talk about that some other time, but this is all part of it. Then they are brought back in for a second live interview. This is crucial. Nobody gets hired on the first interview or even screening. They go to a second interview. And this is an interview to qualify people. And now you're talking about high accountability, high performance, playing the game, you know, absenteeism and all this other kind of garbage. And you get that all out in the qualifications and whether they're competitive as human beings, because salespeople are competitive, so forth and so on. And then when you're done with a qualification process, you make a pile. And these are people that are qualified at least through this process. And then you apply another third final thought, which is the selection process. And that's where you up the game just a little bit. The bar gets raised a little bit and you see who can get over that bar. And then you make deals. You make deals. You don't just hire someone. You make a deal. You say, you know what? I like you. Seems like you like us. Let's give this go for a couple of weeks. At the end of a couple of weeks, I want you to come back in the office and tell me whether you want to continue, and I'll tell you whether I want to continue, and then we'll set up a gig. But those kinds of things work out really, really well. That's the system, Justin, in any event. So just to review, there's a review of the application, telephone screening, disqualifying interview, qualifying interview, and then the selection process.
Got it. And in those disqualifying and qualifying interviews, how long are they? Should they be or should they not be, I guess?
Well, I think that's a good question, actually. The first interview looks something like this. They sit on some chair somewhere and we ask them to read a piece of paper. And in the piece of paper, it says, "Hi, you're being interviewed by Justin. It's going to be a short interview, the first one, because we just want to meet and say hello and get a sense of who you are before we do a more serious interview. This is the job. These are your responsibilities. This is how much you get paid. Here are the benefits. Here's the vacation policy." And you put that all in a letter for them, or a memo or whatever it is, for them to read in advance of coming into the first interview, because you do not want to sit there and go over that kind of information in an interview. And it's kind of cool because they already have, frankly, they have an answer to a lot of their questions before they actually walk in. But one must understand that you're interviewing them. They're not interviewing you. So when they start asking about the company and all that other kind of stuff, it takes away from the actual interview process itself. Those first interviews should be no more than 15 to 20 minutes max. And you actually tell them that in the letter, because if you're anything like me, when the guy when the person walks in, sits down within 14 tenths of a second, you already know you're in love or you're in hate. It's not correct, but you kind of know, right?
You have a feeling. Yeah, you have a feeling.
Yeah, and you go through the interview and I've been surprised as many times as I haven't been surprised. You know what I mean? Where I was dead wrong and let the interview take its process. But it is always kind of fun to, you know, you're not supposed to judge anybody, but I defy you not to, right?
No, I think everybody that's hiring has an idea of the feeling they're looking for, the vibe they want to get from the individual. Because that's how they're going to represent themselves to the clients as well. So yeah, I totally get it.
The ability to communicate.
Well, Harry, tell me, any final thoughts on always hiring?
Yeah, I would either stay away from it and pretend you didn't hear the podcast, or recognize it for what it truly is, and that is the opportunity to add staff that can really rock your business. You can really up your game. I mean, we have all these sports analogies all the time ad nauseum, right? Football, baseball, all sorts of analogies to sports. And it makes sense. You have a coach, you have players, you have accountability, these things, and you have training. All these things make sense as analogies. But I could just tell you this, if it were true that sports at a high level is a good analogy for salesmanship and retail management, district management, then I assure you, you might want to take a look at their recruiting programs, because they do have people that do this for a living.
You've been listening to Retail Revisited. If our conversation today inspired you, please be sure to rate us on iTunes or share us with your friends. You can see a full list of all our episodes at thefriedmangroup.com. And for more information on how the Friedman Group can transform your business, you can contact us at sales@thefriedmangroup.com. A special thanks to Harry J. Friedman for sharing his 35 years of unbelievable experience for all of us to hear.